Hi, everyone. Dr. Cheryl Selman here, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today, and thank you for taking the time to have an open mind to explore topics with people who are really on the leading edge of their knowledge, of their search for answers. And I promise you this will be another profound conversation that we're having today. This is part of the special series I am doing for what I call Breast Health Awareness Month. So the entire month of October has been a time when I have been exploring through these important conversations with practitioners, researchers, authors, variety of people who have been sharing their insights and their wisdoms to understand how we can support and optimize breast health and also support those of us who are healing from a breast cancer episode. And I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen in, because truly education is our greatest power to support our health. And particularly taking responsibility for our health is the way that we can move through the maze that comes up whenever we are dealing with a chronic condition. There's a lot of options, a lot of offers, a lot of encouragement one way or the other. We have family members pushing us. We have our doctors pushing us. We have alternative practitioners. And we need to get the knowledge so we can find our way through this journey successfully. And that's really part of the greater purpose that I have in these radio shows and these special series as well. And as we continue on this journey of exploring and getting empowered with the knowledge that provides a holistic picture of what is going on within us, how do we support healing, I am really pleased today to be exploring the topic of our emotional wounds, how unresolved emotional wounds can support this healing journey with cancer. And many years ago now, I read an article that absolutely fascinated me. It was an article talking about the work of a German researcher, Dr. Hammer, who had uncovered through his own personal journey with cancer the connection between unresolved emotional wounds and how they initiate changes in our physical. He has initiated the work called German New Medicine. That's the term he created for his profound insight. And by the way, he was an oncologist. We're going to learn more about him. We're going to learn more about this work with my guest today. So Isadora Laker is the first Canadian German New Medicine educator and consultant authorized by Dr. Hammer, who resides in Toronto, Canada, where she pioneered the introduction of the German New Medicine and continues to train medical and lay specialists in its practice throughout North America and abroad. Isadora is also instrumental in introducing Dr. Hammer's work to South America and Pacific Rim countries, as well as India and parts of the African continent. Isadora discovered the work of Dr. Hammer in 1992 through a colleague at Herbs and Health Holistic Center in Toronto. In 1994, Isadora met a highly renowned protege of Dr. Hammer and invited him to conduct the first new medicine seminar in North America. Her new medicine studies, as Dr. Hammer's research then called it, continued under his protege's supervision until 1997, when she inaugurated her series of new medicine seminars. In 1998, Isadora was introduced to Dr. Hammer and, at his request, sponsored his first seminar in Canada. After this event, she became his student and shortly thereafter was entrusted by him with overseeing the translation of his thesis, The Summary of the New Medicine. And it's my great pleasure to have Isadora, speaking with us today, sharing with us the work of Dr. Hammer and the work that she is doing in the field of German New Medicine and supporting her patients on their healing journey. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's a pleasure to be here today.
You know, I know you're really, really busy. This is a work that has but you really have dedicated yourself to. So I'm so grateful to have this time with you. And I want to start our conversation by having you share with us your own personal experience with cancer, because this is how you really came into this whole area, through your
yes.
own personal journey. So can you share a little bit about what your experience was?
Well, in 92, at the time, I had not been officially diagnosed with a cancer. However, there was a strong suspicion that I had developed a considerable or sizable melanoma, which was about 5 centimeters in diameter. And I also had an existing breast lump since I was age 19. So, of course, my doctor was quite alarmed when he saw this, and this was in 1988 when I developed this. And he suggested we remove it immediately. And, of course, at that time I was also very immersed in natural medicine. Of course, my background is in nutrition and in clinical herbalism since 1978. So I had a strong conviction that I would be able to deal with this. And, you know, so he said, let's take it off. And I said, I'd rather see if I can do something about it, and let's wait and see. And, of course, it never developed any further. It was literally just there. And the same with the breast lump. So in 1992, when I came across the research of Dr. Hammer, of course, the first place you look is within self to see if you can make that connection. And it was at that time that I actually realized what was the possible origin of what I had developed. And by 1994, when I met my first teacher of the new medicine, as we called it in those days, I had my first CT, and a CAT scan, and I sat down with him after a seminar, and he began to look at it, and he literally told me my entire medical history just from a brain scan. And that was a life-altering moment for me, because I had never experienced anything so accurate. It was mind-boggling. So that was confirmation for me that this really was the real thing, and that Dr. Hammer had found something that was highly accurate. He was actually able to tell me that I had the lump in my breast, that I had the melanoma on my back, the side of the body it was on. It was really quite amazing. And of course,
did he also say that it was dormant or?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes, he was able to tell me that it had been in the healing phase for quite some time. In other words,
right.
It stopped growing.
Right.
So, and of course, these were situations that were unconnected from the emotional standpoint as well. One developed when I was 19. The other one developed, I think I was about 38, something like that. So, or no, not that old, maybe 35. But anyway, it was confirmation for me, and from there on I had to take this further. And, of course, Dr. Hammer answered all the questions that we had in natural medicine as to why we got results and why we didn't get results in certain cases. So I began to study, of course, and then out of necessity in 1996, because the protege of Dr. Hammer's was not able to come on a regular basis to keep the training going, I started to give the preliminary seminars. So, but from there on, it was no looking back.
I have a couple of questions. So mm-hmm. Dr. Hammer's work is involved in doing CT scans, looking at the brain structures, what's happening within the brain. So did you have to get a CT scan to work with Dr. Hammer's protege to have yourself evaluated?
Not really, because the wonderful thing about Dr. Hammer's research is that we can approach it from any level. We can approach it from the level of the diagnosis or the biopsy report if we're looking at a cancer, but we take it from the symptoms. It's really quite extraordinary that he managed to use the CT as a tool to evaluate what is going on. And, of course, in the GNM, We use this as ultimate confirmation in the case of a serious illness. So he didn't see this in the beginning. He only came across the possibility of using a CAT scan as a tool maybe 3 or 4 years into his research.
So this is probably a good place to segue into the explanation of what German New Medicine is. What is the work of Dr. Hammer? What is his contribution to this, you know, greater understanding of the dynamics that drive chronic illnesses? Well, you know, what, particularly what is the connection and the relationship with the emotional dynamic within us, these unresolved emotional wounds and traumas? So take it away, Isadora.
Okay. Well, in essence, in a nutshell, Dr. Hammer found that it was an event in your life that was unexpected or unanticipated that created the disease process. Of course, his initial research began with cancers because at the time he was a cancer patient. He had developed a testicular cancer literally within 3 months after the sudden death of his son. This is a long story, but anyone can look it up on the internet. But his son, Dirk, who was 17 at the time, was shot by the Italian Crown Prince, Victor Emmanuel. And over a three-month process, in and out of hospital surgeries, he ultimately died. And shortly after that, Dr. Hammer was diagnosed with a testicular cancer. Of course, Dr. Hammer is a traditional medical doctor with traditional training, and he had surgery, and he did question that the sudden onset of his disease might be related to what he experienced over that three-month period. It was very dramatic. I mean, when you read the history, it was horrendous. So I'm not surprised that he developed this particular disease. So he had the surgery, went on with his life, and 2 years later he got the position as a head internist at an oncology clinic in Munich that was associated with the university there. And this is when he began his research. And it began really quite casually, in the sense that all he did was begin to speak with his patients as to whether or not they had experienced an unanticipated event in their lives prior to the onset of the cancer. And, of course, in every case, this was confirmed. What was really astonishing was that specific kinds of conflicts create specific kinds of cancers. So he was able to eventually, over the course of his research, identify the exact cause of specific cancers. Now, the other aspect of this is that he found that all diseases had two phases. In natural medicine, of course, we identify hot phases and cold phases. In Chinese medicine, in Ayurvedic medicine, we look at diseases as either being hot or cold. However, Dr. Hammer found that these hot and cold phases were actually part of the entire disease process, beginning with a cold phase and ending in the hot phase before you go back to normotonia. So he began to categorize all diseases and when they occurred, and he found that a good 60% of all of our diseases known to man only occur when the conflict is resolved. And this completely stands medicine on its head, because in fact, these so-called healing phases turned out to be repair phases on the organic level. And yet we saw them as a disease process.
I mean, that's what's so fascinating is that his work, and we have to say that he's, you know, he has seen thousands of patients, and we're talking about someone who has profound clinical experience. It's not just a theory. He has actually been working with his patients, and quite a number of them, and sees this process occur. So, I mean, what you're based on German New Medicine and his work, what you're saying is that when people are experiencing a manifestation of their illness, when a tumor appears, this actually is part of a healing phase of...
It can be, yes, yes. Now, there are some diseases that occur during the conflict active phase. Here we're looking at cancers that are known as adenocarcinomas. Of course, functional disturbances such as diabetes or hypoglycemia, MS, those are examples of conflict active phases. And then, of course, we have the healing phase diseases that wreak havoc, so to speak. Flu, a cough, an ordinary cold, children's diseases known as measles or mumps or chickenpox, they are all healing phases. Anything that is classified as an infection or an inflammatory process, these are all healing phases. In other words, they're the second half of a phase that was initiated by a shock or an unanticipated event.
Yeah, so let's go into that. So when you say that there's the conflict stage, which is what we're going to talk about now is an event, and then we can go into more depth of what the healing phase is, that resolution phase. So let's start with explaining what the conflict stage is all about.
Well, the moment that we have a shock, Dr. Hammer has called this Dirk-Hammer syndrome in honor of his son Dirk, who died at the hands of the Italian crown prince. And we call this DHS for short. So I'll refer to this event as a DHS. So the moment that we do have this DHS, we go into the stress phase. And in this stress phase, we will have cold hands and feet, poor appetite. There could be weight loss. And, of course, we wake up around 3 o'clock in the morning. This is the stress phase. So anybody that wakes up at 3 a.m. is in a stress phase. However, depending on the nature of the conflict and the exact part of the brain that has been affected, that's going to determine what happens on the organic level. Now, in some cases, if it has created a problem within the older part of the brain, let's take the pons of the brain stem, for example, where we would find the relay to the liver parenchyma, in other words, not the bile ducts. Here, if they developed, let's say, a starvation conflict, then we would see nodules developing on the liver. And these nodules would continue to grow as long as the conflict is active. And when the conflict resolves and the starvation conflict has passed, then these nodules that had built up will do one of two things. Either they will remain dormant, or if we had the appropriate microbes within our system to degrade them, they would begin to degrade and eventually disappear. Now, of course, this eventually disappearing is really dependent on how large this tumor became. But if it was a small manifestation, something that lasted maybe a short period of time, maybe a month or two, then it can disappear and cause what we would say is qualified as a cavern, in other words, a space in the liver. Now, this in itself is quite amazing because the liver has incredible regenerative properties. These caverns even disappear over a period of time and the liver becomes completely normal. Now, we also have diseases that only occur when you resolve the conflict, in which case, during the stress phase, we simply just have the stress symptoms. We have the emotional upheaval, of course, that we're trying to deal with. There could be, on the organic level, instead of cellular growth, there could be a degeneration of cells that we would call a necrosis or an ulceration. However, when you resolve the conflict, then the body will begin the repair phase. And this repair phase will take place during the first half of what we call the healing phase. And, of course, this is dependent on how long the conflict active phase was. So the rule of thumb, though, for the most part, most healing phases will last between 6 weeks and perhaps 3 months. That's the first path.
Can we go back to sure. That trauma that goes on and that starts initiating changes? So let's go back to the example you gave of the liver. Mm-hmm. When you said a starvation trauma, I don't know what that means. Can you give more details or maybe some examples?
Yes. Well, you know, these are biological programs that Dr. Hammer has discovered that occur in all of nature. And these biological programs are really there to help us to survive these extreme circumstances. So if we're going to look at the response in the primitive brain for starvation, this in our modern day lives would mean that there was a financial cataclysm in our lives. For example, you lost your job, you couldn't pay your mortgage, you didn't know how your family was going to manage to put food on the table, so on and so forth. That is a modern-day starvation conflict. Now, in nature, this would be a starvation conflict where there may have been a famine and there was no food available whatsoever. Now, the biological mechanism behind this is to create a cellular growth to enhance your body's capability of nutritional absorption. And this is facilitated by the liver in this case. And what happens is there is cell augmentation to increase the capability of the liver so that you make more of less nutrition, so that your body uses whatever it is able to take in to its optimum so that you can survive. This is, in fact, a survival mechanism.
So it's like it's a metaphor. I mean, the starvation situation, most of us are not facing starvation, but it's a metaphor because it stimulates that unresolved or a fear that you're not going to survive. So it
Absolutely.
Could be the loss of the breadwinner in the family, right, or
yes.
the mother of the family, or
yes.
it could be, like you were saying, a financial situation where suddenly you're in foreclosure and
right.
all, you know, unconsciously, the unconscious motivating fear has to do with survival.
Exactly.
Right, which is facing a lot of people right now. I mean, that is a big fear going on.
Well, it is. It is. But, you know, thankfully, in Western countries, we have credit cards and, you know,
yeah,
we're
fear,
allowed
I mean,
to go into debt.
Yeah,
you see.
But the fear,
so
but it buys us
time.
But what you're saying is it's initiating this unconscious fear programming.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, that's in the subconscious, really.
Yes. You know, there are two kinds of liver cancers. One is a bile duct cancer, and one affects the liver itself. There are two different kinds of conflicts, and they are controlled by two different areas of the brain, and also they behave differently. You see, the bile duct conflict will only produce what we qualify as a disease when the conflict is resolved.
Right.
So literally every organ of our body is made up of different cellular structures that are controlled by different areas of the brain that have different conflict scenarios. So this is another aspect of the precision of Dr. Hammer's work.
So every emotional, so the basis of the German New Medicine is starts with the fact that there is some unresolved emotional event or trauma
mm-hmm.
situation that occurred at some point in a person's life, either in the
yes.
past or in the recent present.
Yes.
And that
now we can remain in a conflict active phase literally all of our lives without there
right.
being any physical repercussions. It's the healing phases that can create the problems in some cases.
Well, it's a little confusing, I think, for people. It's like you would, because you would think that when you're in a trauma situation or have been activated trauma, that stress initiates changes
mm-hmm.
in the body. But what you're saying is it's when you are resolving this matter, this healing phase, that these conditions may manifest.
Exactly. And that's about 60% of all diseases that we know of.
Can you give an example? I know you work with a lot of people. You have very busy practice. Maybe you can just pull out one kind of story that helps us understand this better.
You mean a healing phase?
Yes. Well, you know, this. I mean, just the situation that a person was dealing with, that you helped them resolve and work through the rest of the process.
Okay. Well, you know, I found from my own experience that once we really identify the exact cause of the physical problem that we develop, that we can speed up the healing phase. For example, fibromyalgia, it's very common, isn't it? A lot of people these days are diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and there's a huge mystery around it. Whereas when we understand the tissue correlation and how the body has responded at the moment of the DEHS, we can get rid of it very, very quickly. Now, fibromyalgia involves soft tissue, connective tissue, not the bone, and it is what we call an inflammatory process. Now, as I mentioned earlier, all inflammatory processes are what we call healing phases, and they occur in the first half of the healing phase. However, a lot of these healing phases become chronic because we have little relapses back and forth into conflict, or the conflict isn't completely resolved, and so we remain in what we call a hanging healing. This is what we call a chronic condition. So I remember I was teaching in Los Angeles a few years ago, and one of the students, who is now a GNM practitioner, by the way, also very immersed in psychotherapy, she came to me during the break and said, "Ilsadora, I've got fibromyalgia. I've had it for years. My pain is on the outside of my upper arms and on the outside of my thighs." And right away, the GNM practitioner understands that this is a healing phase and that the outside of the limbs represents something that we're unable to push away or get rid of. So I asked her, "What is it or who is it that you're unable to get out of your life?" And she looked at me and says, "Oh, it's my husband. We've been divorced for so many years. He just keeps trying to come back into our life, and he's using the kids and so on and so forth." And she was happy that she understood this, went to the break. After lunch, she comes back and she says, "Ilsadora, for the first time in so many years, I have no pain."
Wow.
Yeah. So that quickly, yeah, we were able to get her to understand the origin, and the physical body stopped responding.
Right.
It was like, yeah, turning off the switch on the brain or the level of the psyche. Now, and this is the thing that I've found in my experience over the years, that it's the subconscious mind who does not understand the concept of time or space, that once it has a conflict that has been opened up, that will remain alive, and that will rule our physical well-being. So by getting into the subconscious thought process or the experience and getting it to understand what the origin is, automatically that switch is turned off. Now, it really does depend on where you are in the healing phase, because in most cases we are looking at inflammation, and that has to run its course. But if it's not running its course, then we know that this is a hanging situation, and you're very close to the healing phase. So it's really just a matter of turning off that switch and getting you over the hump.
Yeah, this is so interesting, because actually I have a background as a psychotherapist, and I did a lot of work with mind-body healing as well as being a naturopath. So this is very, very close to what I have originally started with in my work and saw amazing results, but I didn't have the context that we were describing here. This goes into it even more depth. This is a great conversation. Let me stop for a moment so we can take our break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about an understanding through this lens of German New Medicine, the conflicts that go on with breast cancer. Fascinating conversation. I look forward to exploring this more in greater depth, and I'm sure you will all find it fascinating as well. So this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we will be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are talking today with Isadora Laker, who is the first Canadian German New Medicine educator and consultant authorized by Dr. Hammer, who created German New Medicine. And we're talking about this profound model of understanding of the dynamics that initiate illnesses and also the need to resolve the emotional conflicts that will support profound and long-lasting healing as well. So we were talking about the relationship of unresolved emotions and how they are activating, initiating trauma in our brain that then gets translated, depending on what parts of the brain and tissues are impacted, how it manifests. So first of all, before we talk more specifically about breast cancer, which I find really, really interesting, maybe you can give us a simple explanation of why is it that certain parts of the brain seem to be affected and therefore manifest in different parts of the body as opposed to other parts of the brain?
Well, this really has to do with how we evolved, and these are steps in evolution. For example, the oldest part of the brain, the pons of the brain stem, specifically reacts to situations that threaten our survival. And here we're talking about vital function, such as the ingestion and the excretion of food. Of course, we've got all of our glands in between the areas of the body that facilitate the ingestion and the excretion. So we're looking at the entire endocrine system and the old intestinal mucosa, everything that our body needs to do to survive on a physical basis. Mm-hmm. So here we could be looking at a starvation conflict, or we could be looking at a fear of death conflict, which would affect the lungs, the lung alveoli. It could affect our stomach if this was a morsel conflict, something that we were unable to digest or come to terms with. These are all survival mechanisms. Now, as we evolved, of course, Dr. Hammer believes that we originated from the sea, and as we evolved, we had to develop the mechanism to survive on land. And from that moment on, we developed the dermis, which is the deeper layer of the skin, and this was to facilitate protection from the elements. And of course, that had to be wired to another part of our brains, and that became the cerebellum. And from there on, once we were thrust on the land and had this capability to survive, we had to develop a mechanism by which to move on land. So we developed a skeletal structure, we developed muscles, and this facilitated the development of the newer part of the brain, which is really what we know as the modern-day white matter. And, of course, that part of the brain controls our skeletal structure, for example, as in a bone cancer or a lymphatic cancer or a muscle degeneration. And from there on, we developed higher thinking. And this is when the latest part of the brain developed, the cerebrum. And here, interestingly enough, this also controls the outer skin, which is the newest layer of the skin to develop. And most of the conflicts that affect that part of the brain have to do with relationships and our position in a group. So as we evolved, of course, the different areas of the brain evolved, and of course this was all out of necessity and to help us to survive these circumstances.
You know, let's go in and explore this more specifically with breast cancer, since this mm-hmm. is Breast Health Awareness Month, and you know, this is an opportunity to understand the emotional components that are part and parcel of a diagnosis, or potentially can lead to that if not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about breast cancer from that German New Medicine perspective, please.
Well, there are two kinds. And that is because the breast is comprised of the glandular portion, which we call a lobular breast cancer. And that particular tissue has its control in the cerebellum. And being part of the old brain, here we have cell mitosis or tissue plus or nodule forming literally the moment that we go into the conflict activity. Then we have the milk duct cancer, which is called intraductal, and this is really the invaginated outer skin into the breast, into that tube that transports the milk that is produced by the gland, and this is controlled by the newest part of the brain, the cerebrum, the sensory cortex, to be precise. And this particular tissue behaves completely differently from the glandular tissue. Here, during the conflict active phase, we have ulcerations forming within the milk ducts. And again, in this situation, because these are ulcerations forming, this is a degenerative process, we have literally no symptoms. So our symptoms for the intraductal type of breast cancer will only occur when we come to a resolution of that particular conflict. Now, even the conflict context for each of these breast cancers is very different. In the lobular kind, here we are looking at a worry conflict or a situation that has caused a big rift in a relationship as the result of an argument. Now, when we look at the biological meaning behind this particular manifestation, it really has to do with the nurturing desires of a woman. Now, when we have a worry over a loved one, let's say your child was struck by a car and its life hung in the balance, as long as this woman is in the conflict active phase, there will be cell mitosis, in other words, a nodule that will form on the glandular part of that tissue. And when the child becomes well and recovers, then, of course, this will stop growing. Now, there are two possibilities of what will happen to this particular breast nodule. Either it will remain dormant, which is what happened with me. I developed this when I was 19 years old, and it remained dormant after I had resolved the conflict. Or if you have the available microbes in your system, and by microbes here we're talking about TB mycobacteria or the oldest microbes known to man, that would facilitate the degradation or the decomposition of this nodule when the conflict has been resolved. Now, if this is the case, then it can disappear completely. Now, in my personal case, I didn't have these microbes, and this nodule stayed within my breast, I think about 30-some-odd years before it disappeared. But I had to do some fancy footwork where the conflict context was concerned before it really disappeared on its own, and I was really surprised that it did disappear after that length of time. Now, on the other hand, we have the intraductal tumors, which only develop when the conflict is solved. And here we're looking at a separation conflict. This is the way Dr. Hammer expresses it, my child has been torn from my breast, or my partner has been torn from my breast. So this is a separation conflict, and as I said, during the active phase, we don't have any symptoms except for the emotional stress. However, when we resolve this, these ulcerations will begin to heal, and this is when the swelling within the breast will develop, and this is called an intraductal carcinoma.
Wow. So if you're dealing with an incident, you know, someone leaves the nest, or a child is chronically ill, or a partner is, you know, there's a conflict, the partner is wanting to leave. then this is the active phase when you're dealing with it, when it's, you know, you're having all the emotional responses and uncertainty. And then when the situation gets resolved at some point in time, when however that may occur, that's when the initiation of these lesions or whatever can really heal. But they get misinterpreted by the paradigm that we're operating with now. Is that
exactly? Exactly. And of course, the paradigm will designate this as a malignant process. Whereas in the GNM, we don't use those terms because malignancy infers that it will spread to another organ, when in fact this is not the way a cancer will spread. This is not random. This is something that occurs as a result of a DHS.
Right. So can you talk about the kinds of conflicts on the side of the breast? Because I found that to be really fascinating.
Yes.
And
well, we have to first understand whether the person is naturally inclined to be a left-hander or a right-hander. And I have to emphasize naturally inclined because we do train ourselves to be primarily right-handers from the time we're asked to pick up a pencil or a pen in school. So we do train ourselves, and there are various tests that we do to really determine accurately whether a person is wired as a right-hander or wired as a left-hander. Now, in a right-handed person, the right side of the body will respond to partner conflict. So by partner conflicts, we mean your first partner is your father, and then, of course, siblings, then, of course, dear friends, your life's partner, or it could even be a business partner or a pet that you love very dearly. Then the other side, the left side in a right-hander, would present conflicts that had to do with specifically your children or your mother. So it's very very specific as to what side of the body is going to respond when you have a conflict of separation. And this isn't just with the lobular kind, it's also with the interductal kind. So, and this is also to do with skin diseases, for example, eczemas, the ovaries, the testicles, they all respond to laterality, as does the skeletal structure. So this is a very, very important element that Dr. Hommer has discovered, and that is that we are wired to respond a very specific way.
And the other thing, I mean, this is a really deep topic, and we're just kind of scratching the surface of giving people an awareness, which is why I would really like people to learn more about what your work is. It's very profound, and there are many facets to it, so this is just a peek into what this big, huge theory is really addressing. But in the time we have, because we're talking about the breast, which is really interesting, so if you find cancer manifesting on the, if you're right-handed, so we have to emphasize it's what handedness you are. And if you are naturally right-handed, not trained to be right-handed, but naturally, you know, left-handed, which happens a lot in our culture. So if you are naturally right-handed and your breast issue is found on the left side, you're dealing with this torn from the source. This has to do with your mother or children. You're torn from this nurturing, mothering energy, right?
Yes.
And the right side, if something's manifesting on the right side, and as you said, it could be the ovaries as well and the testes as well, and is that also the prostate?
No, the prostate doesn't respond to laterality.
Okay. So then that has to do with a partner conflict. That's such a key. That is a key for so many people listening of what they have to delve into. And I want you to also just explain the fear of the metastases that occurs and the fear. And it is a fear. And can we talk about that trauma as well?
Yes. Well, you know, when Dr. Hommer had this revelation that it was a shock that would develop a cancer, Of course, he had to look at the conventional theory of metastasis, which literally states that a cancerous cell from what we call a primary tumor is going to either swim through the bloodstream or the lymphatic system and attach itself to another organ and create another cancer manifestation. This is, according to conventional medicine, a very unreliable process. However, Dr. Hammer fully understood, once he understood this concept of the DHS, that the spreading of cancer in 95% of the cases had to do with the fear and the panic and the diagnosis, which are all initiated by a shock.
So now, getting a diagnosis is a shock, and
yes.
I would agree. It's a terrible shock when you get the news.
But you know, I'd like to explain the breast cancer process because this is such a very clear picture to understand how this process works in any cancer disease. Now, when a woman is diagnosed with any kind of breast cancer, of course, we have to look at how she responded at that moment and what she is offered. Now, if this woman, if this is a very large manifestation and a mastectomy is justified, then there is a strong chance that this woman might develop what we call a self-devaluation conflict. In other words, I'm unwhole. There's something wrong here. I can no longer function 100% as a woman. And here we could be looking at a manifestation down the line that would appear in the lymph underneath the arm, which is in very close proximity to the breast itself. It would be on that same side. Or it could be in the rib cage or the spine, again, in very close proximity to where she had the manifestation originally. And then if treatment isn't going well or she continues to have diagnoses of cancer, eventually the doctor will say, well, treatment isn't working, you're in a very serious situation. I think you should get your affairs in order, and perhaps by Christmas you may not be here any longer. That kind of a shock would give her a lung cancer. So here we're looking at a progression in the conventional sense, which is really to do with the conflicts and the panic that she experienced since her diagnosis. Now, when we examine this through GNM eyes, based on the conventional theory of metastasis, which would be the spreading of a cancer through the system, through the bloodstream, we have to consider that, number one, conventional medicine has never seen a cancer cell in the bloodstream. Also, we have to remember that if cancer did spread through the blood, that it would be transmittable through or transmitted through donating blood, in which case we would have to have some sort of screening process in place to see whether or not there is cancer in the blood. Now, not to mention that, but it would also take great intelligence for a single cell to dislodge itself from, let's say, the introductal tissue, go through the arterial blood and attach itself to the lymphatic system, transform into a different cellular structure, and create what we call a healing phase manifestation in the lymph, or go to the bone and degenerate the bone. And it would all have to happen in very close proximity to the breast. This is literally impossible. So I think Dr. Hammer's argument with what he has discovered with metastasis is really quite accurate. And I can guarantee you, with all the 20 years of experience that I've had in interviewing cancer patients, that we can define the moment in time that their secondary cancers or tertiary cancers were set into motion. Not to mention the fact that we can see this also in the CAT scan of the brain. This is ultimate confirmation that this was a DHS, because with this DHS, it is visible in a CAT scan. This is the ultimate proof of the efficacy of Dr. Hammer's findings.
So there's lesions in the brain, there are changes in the brain that are the result of this trauma.
Absolutely, and wow. They transform along with the conflict scenario. So we can identify conflict activity and also identify conflicts that had been resolved. Otherwise, my dear friend, my first teacher of the new medicine, would not have been able to confirm that my tumor in my breast had stopped growing and that my melanoma also had stopped growing.
Right, without ever knowing you had a breast tumor or
I
melanoma.
I told him nothing.
Right, so he saw it. So, you know, I have tons of questions. We don't have that much time. So first of all, I want to ask how around we're talking breast cancer and these issues, the emotional issues, what is it that you do, or how are these resolved, or can you work with a variety of modalities? Is there one specific thing that you work with, or can other modalities?
Well, there's something that I have to say about breast cancer, and that is that in a lot of cases, we cannot predict it. It depends on where it is in the breast, how long this woman has been dealing with it, the size, the mass, is this a recurrence? There are so many factors that we have to consider. But in my personal experience, the best results that we have had are from women that approach this with the understanding of the five biological laws that Dr. Hammer has discovered. In other words, it will not spread without rhyme or reason throughout your system. You control this. And this process is not to be feared. As long as you do the right thing, there is no cause for panic and no cause for the cancer to develop or another cancer to develop as a result of this. So I always suggest for a breast cancer patient that she has a lumpectomy. And this is really, and then of course we work out all of the conflict issues.
So women can choose the modalities they want to work with that sit
yes.
well for them,
but yes.
they, but what you're saying, what also needs to be acknowledged and addressed are the emotional issues that
Absolutely.
Are always
Absolutely.
There as part of this process.
And there's something that we always have to remember, and it really has to do with the therapy that we choose. It really doesn't matter what we choose. We have to be at the end of the healing phase before any kind of therapy is going to be successful.
We have
and
to
that
be at
means
the
that
end
we first
of the healing
have to address.
Phase.
Yes, that means we first have to address the emotional issue that was responsible for the physical problem and make sure that we are in the healing phase.
And how do you make sure of that?
Well, you have to be someone like me
so you
that
have
understands
ways in your work.
how to facilitate this. It's really just a matter of understanding the moment in time that you had developed this problem initially, the DHS, and everything that you experienced at that moment. We try not to leave any stones unturned because there could be elements that maybe even unresolved for you that could be potential triggers. And those are the things that we address. We try to make sure that they are all eliminated and acknowledged and have surfaced from the subconscious mind so that down the line they don't create another problem.
Well, this is definitely food for thought, Ilzadora. You know, your passion to this work and the fact that we have to say that Dr. Hammer did what tens of thousands of CT
yes.
scans, right? So, I mean, he has witnessed these traumas that have been registered in the brain and then where they have manifested. So there is credibility, even though it's such a challenging paradigm to the dominant paradigm that we live in and have, of course, enshrined with the work of, you know, billions of dollars invested
yes.
in the field of oncology. But it's something that we really have to be open to, and certainly the relationship of the unresolved emotional issues have a direct correlation to the kinds of illnesses and diseases and where they manifest, and that is an absolute fact. You know, can't argue that.
Yes. Well, the way I see it, the German New Medicine is the medicine of the future, And I sincerely hope that it will be embraced fully one day by all forms of medicine, be it traditional or be it alternative.
Well, I know you're working hard towards that goal. And for people to get more knowledge, more information, or more training, what is the best website for them to go to?
Well, I've got two websites. The easiest one would be newmedicine.ca. You can go to my website that is dedicated to education called gnmonlineseminars.com through a link on the front page of my home website, newmedicine.ca. And you can also order a free online presentation. It's about a 2.5-hour presentation with a Q&A at the end where I outline this entire system and give examples of how disease appears and what we can do about it. That's free for everyone. If you email us that request, we can send out a copy to you.
And it's a fascinating 2.5-hour lecture. I have listened to it. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, Isadora, Isadora Laker, for being here, sharing your wisdom. It's just been a delight and quite a profound conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And for all of you, thank you again for joining me for another conversation into what women must know, and men too, for that matter. And remember, until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.